Coffeehouse Shots is sponsored by Look Forward, the podcast from Rathbones on what the future might look like. Find out more at rathboneslookforward.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm John Connolly. I'm joined today by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Today marked the return of PMQs after the extended Easter recess, but it was not PMQs as we know it. For starters, Keir Starmer had replaced Jeremy Corbyn as leader of the Labour Party, and he faced off against Dominic Raab, who's standing in for Boris Johnson. And it was a semi-virtual session as well, with many MPs doing questions over a video link rather than from the floor. Starting with Keir Starmer, James, how do you reckon he did in his first PMQs, and was it a big departure from the Corbyn era?
Well, Keir Starmer's never going to kind of set the heather alight as a parliamentary performer, but he was far better than Jeremy Corbyn was. His questions were detailed, and in a crucial difference to Jeremy Corbyn, he actually kind of followed up on what Dominic Raab said in response, rather than sticking to the same six questions come what may. I thought the session was more political than I had expected, and I think that's actually a good thing. I think, you know, challenge and accountability are two of the strengths of the Westminster system and lead to better government. I thought the kind of takeaways from the session were this 100,000 tests by the end of the month is obviously, if the government doesn't hit that, and it looks like it won't hit that, that is going to be a problem for it. Kind of Keir Starmer was trying to present that as a kind of general test of a government's competence in its handling of coronavirus. I thought the other things was, we saw from Dominic Raab what the government's two defences are going to be about its handling of this pandemic. When Keir Starmer accused the government of being slow to go into lockdown, Dominic Raab said, look, you know, we follow the scientific advice. And are you, Keir Starmer, really saying that you know better than the chief medical officer and the chief scientific advisor what action should have been taken when? And then the second point Dominic Raab made later in the session was the government has managed to expand the NHS's capacity to prevent the system from being overwhelmed. And I think this is the government's one undisputable achievement in this crisis. I think if 6 weeks ago we had been told that there would be 800 deaths a day at the peak, we all would have assumed that that would have meant that the health service would have been kind of essentially overrun. And it hasn't been. And that is the thing that the government can point to as its biggest achievement during this pandemic.
And starting with testing, I mean, Starmer sort of raised the difference between capacity and actual number of tests that are being carried out today. Do you think Raab had any sort of convincing answer, Katie, about why there is that gap at the moment?
Well, he mentioned a few things that have already come up in terms of the press conferences, in the sense that one of the issues is actually getting people to the testing centres where they are. Lots of the time they are quite far out. If you have people in care homes, they don't want to make this huge journey to get that test. And he said that was one of the issues. And they are looking at having mobile stations, easier access ones going forward. But again, there were no firm plans on when they would open. I think that it did strike me in PMQs, quite a few of the things that Keir Starmer was bringing up were things that we've heard be brought up at the press conferences by journalists, but the format of Prime Minister's questions, and I think Parliament in general, just does mean you can apply a greater level of scrutiny to it, and it's easier to press to try and get an answer. I think, as James says, if the government misses this target, clearly they're going to get a lot of criticism for doing that, and I think it will be held up as one of the examples when people want to make the case against the government of promises that couldn't be delivered. Now, Number 10, I think, have clarified today that even though Raab was talking about capacity, the 100,000 target is still 100,000 people being tested, and I think that does just show you how hard it is to reach that target. I could potentially imagine a scenario where the capacity is up to 100,000 by the end of the month. But even with that, I mean, a lot would have to happen in the final week or so to reach that. But to go from the level of the number of people actually taking their tests, that level of jump, I think it does seem really difficult right now.
And James, Raab was pressed as well on PPE and the care service. How do you do on these questions?
One of the challenges for the government is we don't have a nationally run care service, which means getting accurate information about what is going on in the care sector out there, much more difficult. You know, I think there is obviously going to be a big conversation about social care after this crisis, and that is going to be one of the issues. I think part of the problem, as Katie said, is the government says there's a test available for every social care worker who wants one. But the problem is, if you've worked a long shift in social care, do you really want to go a mile and a half out of your way on your way home to go and be tested? I mean, this is the problem, is that they need some, if they're going to hit 100,000 tests by the end of the month, I think you need some mechanism by where people can be, you know, healthcare professionals, both in the health service and the care sector, can be tested either at their place of work or very close to it. I think the distances involved at the moment are simply too great. I think PPE is a challenge for the government. We don't produce very much of it in this country. I think one thing we'll hear, with Boris Johnson's already talking with cabinet colleagues about, you know, is self-sufficiency in medical supplies. I think that is going to become national self-sufficiency in medical supplies. I mean, that's going to become another thing that becomes an issue once you're through the crisis. I think the challenge for the government is every country in the world is trying to get hold of more PPE at the moment. And I think one of the worries that some ministers have, and I mean this plays into the question about the public wearing masks, is as you open up the economy, more and more people are going to want PPE. If you are going to reopen schools fully rather than just with this limited number of pupils, very limited number of pupils that there are currently in schools, I think you're going to find teachers requesting PPE. So the government is going to have to be getting more and more of this stuff at a time when global demand for PPE is going through the roof. It is going to be a real logistical challenge for the government.
And Katie, Matt Hancock, the Health Secretary, also gave an update today in Parliament. Did he sort of give any new information?
I think there are a few interesting lines to Matt Hancock's appearance in the chamber. He was physically there. And first off, he said that he believed that currently the UK is at the peak in terms of infections. And I think that's interesting because everything has been pointing to the idea that we may have just had the peak or at least in that general period. But I think this is the first time he had said that. So he said, we are at the peak, but before we relax any social distancing rules or make changes to them, we have set out the 5 tests that have to be met. There was also an interesting line on contact tracing, with Hancock suggesting that for there to be a proper easing, you are going to have contact and trace in place. Now, contact and trace is what other countries, probably more in the East, have had, and means you have probably more of a return to normality, fewer lockdown measures, because you have a team, quite an advanced team, that can test and trace, and you can look at specific infections that way. But I think when he talks about that, it does just give you a sense of how far away we are from perhaps that level of normality in terms of our daily, day-to-day lives, because as we were talking about earlier on this podcast, the government is struggling even to have the 100,000 tests a day target met. And to have contact tracing, you're going to need specific teams who are working very hard, not just to get testing of health workers, but of individuals, and then finding all the people they have been in contact with. So again, I think it's just another logistical challenge that will have to be met when you eventually come up with a full exit strategy. Now, I don't think the implication was that this will be needed in 3 weeks' time, A, because it's just not going to be ready, but two, there are some things you can ease, small things, without having that in place. But I think the comments are pointing to this idea that to have probably the fuller easing, which would see more perhaps socialising with people, I think that kind of thing is what the government is potentially looking at.
And in terms of other impacts of the lockdown, I think the Daily Mail reports on its front page today that something like 75% of cancer referrals are down. Did Hancock kind of address these concerns that maybe not enough people are using the NHS at the moment, James?
So I think one thing the government is trying to communicate at the moment is that you should still go to hospital if you would have gone to hospital normally beforehand, because there is enough spare capacity in the NHS. I think one of the things that is worrying a lot of people in government right now and in the NHS is the number of people going to A&E has fallen off a cliff. Now, some of that is because some people were going to A&E previously when they didn't need to. But I think the worry is people are hesitating before calling an ambulance or going to A&E, and that is probably leading to more people dying of heart attacks and strokes than otherwise have happened. There's also, you know, one of the things that is massively important in dealing with cancer is catching it early. So if people are putting off going to the GP because of that, that is another problem being stored up for down the line. You know, I think if you talk to some Tories, one of the things they say is, you know, look, the government has run its public health information campaign like it is an election campaign. Stay at home, protect the NHS, save lives, has been repeated as endlessly and as effectively as get Brexit done. But the problem with that is it has created a climate in which people don't want to, people basically are like, if there is any way that they can delay going outside, interacting with other people, especially going to a doctor's surgery or a hospital where people think there'd be a particularly high risk of encountering someone with COVID-19, people are choosing to stay at home. And I think that is one of the big challenges. Undoubtedly, one of the really high levels of compliance has been because the messaging has been so brutally effective. But how do you get to a slightly different message to make people think that, you know, if they're worried about a lump, they should still go and get it checked out?
And Katie, do you have any updates on the procurement of ventilators? I know there's some controversy yesterday about an EU ventilator scheme. What was going on there?
So Simon McDonald's appearance at the Select Committee has reignited the story, has brought it back to life. So a few weeks ago, there was a row and it emerged that the UK had not signed up to be part of the EU ventilator procurement scheme, or later on the PPE procurement scheme. And it was suggested that this was perhaps on ideological grounds, so the idea that a Brexit Tory government just didn't want to have any ties with the EU and therefore had chosen not to do something which could have helped the country in its preparedness. The UK government responded that it had actually been a communications error and they just had not been aware that they could join the scheme. Matt Hancock has since said they have now joined a later batch of it, so they're not in for the first bid, but later on they are now in it for future. Then we had the top civil servant and the Foreign Office appear before the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, and he said that it had been a political decision and ministers had been briefed on it. Now, this was very confusing given that it seemed to go completely against the original line. And then fairly late last night, we were told this communication was coming. The civil servant wrote to the committee saying he wanted to correct his evidence. Although he had said this, he didn't actually mean it. He had inadvertently misled the Select Committee. And it wasn't the case that it was a political decision. Now, it's clearly very confusing, the comms around it, but at the moment, it does seem that the government line is the one that everyone is adhering to and that the civil servant has changed their mind on. I think that probably the key thing though in this story is the fact that if you look at this procurement procedure, not a single ventilator for any European country has yet reached any of the countries that did sign up to it in the first round. And I think the similar with PPE. Now, that will change in the coming weeks. But right now, the UK doesn't actually have, isn't lacking in terms of ventilators. So it's one of those rows where I think it'd be a lot more potent, even with the government's denials about, you know, why they missed the scheme, if we actually had a situation where European countries en masse had a lot more ventilators than the UK and the UK didn't. And at the moment, that isn't the case.
And James, do you think this is a bit of a storm in the teacup as well?
Well, I think the ventilators thing is a fascinating example of how the medical thinking on this is evolving. I think, again, you know, if you go back about 6 weeks ago, people thought that ventilators were absolutely the most important single bit of medical equipment during this crisis. One of the things that's happened is that doctors have become less keen on using these mechanical ventilators in the treatment of the disease, and they found that it's much more helpful to kind of give pressurized oxygen kind of earlier on in the process to kind of prevent people from having to go on a ventilator. So in some ways, the question of ventilator procurement, which seems such a big issue at the start of this crisis, is less important now. I think PPE has turned out to be a bigger issue than people expected. I think that is going to be a big challenge, because obviously, as more and more of the economy opens up, there are going to be more and more public servants coming into contact with the public who are going to expect their employer, which is essentially the government, to provide them with that kit.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening.
Coffeehouse Shots is sponsored by the Rathbones Look Forward podcast. Join the world's leading thinkers, writers, and scientists discussing the future of our ever-changing world. In the latest episode, historian Tom Holland talks to broadcaster Andrea Catherwood on the future of morality. Find out more at rathboneslookforward.com.